we can say yes. Now, we may never say that to them, but energetically, we can say, yes, I know what you mean. Yes, I know that experience too. You're fine. I'm fine. You're fine. But if we don't have that experience within ourselves, then especially doing this kind of work, people can go to places and it can be scary. You know, when you're working with somebody and they are obviously terrified, they are suicidal, they are whatever it is that's going on. If that is something that you haven't explored in yourself, it's going to be frightening. You're going to, you know, be sitting there as the facilitator or the mirror or whatever role you're in, thinking, oh God, oh God.
Maybe something's wrong.
Yeah, there's something wrong. You're stop talking about it, you're scaring me.
Yeah.
But if you've gone through everything in yourself such that you know there's nothing to be afraid of, then sorry to be this way, but that's the energy that's coming toward that person, and you cannot fake it. You can't fool somebody. You know, you can't be sitting there terrified saying, oh yeah, no, you're fine. No, really, no.
Yeah, right.
You're fine. Yeah, it doesn't work. But if you have the confidence of your own experience, then you can actually be a comfort to somebody who isn't certain that it's okay.
So I'm struggling to access the one who, all right, ego is struggling. There's a struggle here, I'm identified. To access the one who has the ability to do that.
Well, now, we have to keep in mind, this is where we come directly back to practice. The way we are held in bondage is through secrecy. Right? So, we all know this, right? Conditioning wants to take us off by ourselves and do all of this stuff to us. So it's very invested in us not being forthcoming about what's going on with us. Okay? We're taught to hide all of that. Now, if we could hide it from conditioning, that would be worth going. Okay? But instead, what we try to do is hide it from a bunch of other people who are having exactly the same experience, which is really pretty silly. But you don't know it's silly until you actually get into a place as the one that you're describing, where you're in a room full of people, and whatever you say, everybody in that room knows what you're talking about. Yeah. Melinda?
Well, yes. we were talking about this yesterday, and it came up for me again, that and for me, it's shame. And when we were talking about that thing that we get convinced when we are very, very small, is the thing that's wrong with us, is it seems to me one way to talk about it is that it's the construction of shame. Mm-hmm. And the only way to maintain it is to not talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Which with that image that Dave was, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger as it goes out there.
Yeah, and it seems as though almost everybody has something like that going on, especially the folks who come to the retreats, mm-hmm. but for all of us. And to begin,
and may I just do a quick timeout? Because again, I think this came up where we start through practice and we get it that okay, everybody's got that. So after a while, it's like okay, that's not going to work. And so what begins to work is things like you've been doing this so long, I can't believe that you're in the same. Mm-hmm. So we just start. It, you know, the system starts running parallel tracks of the same process
and finding new content for the shame process.
Right.
To make sure that we won't talk about it and we'll believe there's something really wrong with it.
Yep.
And when we were talking yesterday, I was looking at how it seems as though the people who are really transformed in the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat are the ones who are able to say the thing they have never been able to say, whether it's, you know, my father sexually abused me or, you know, I get yelled at when I pooped in my pants when I was 3 or... Just there's some hideous, horrible secret that's only me, and so I don't talk about it. And to begin to talk about it, and then to discover the freedom of being able to say, this is what's going on.
And to realize that the content is different But everybody's got that same process going.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. Okay.
Well, I was just wanting to respond to when we were talking about being able to say that authentically, that there's nothing wrong, because you know, I had that experience at a point in my life where I was just at my wit's end, ran into you, and you said, I know two things, that there's nothing wrong and there's nothing to be afraid of. And the world that I was in at that point was everything was wrong and I was terrified. Mm-hmm. And so what it testified to me about was that there was this other world. Mm-hmm. And there was no other, where I was at that point, there was no other access to it. So I just really want to say that my own experience is that is incredibly powerful, mm-hmm. for someone to come from that other place and say it's there. Mm-hmm.
And it does have to be authentic, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you would have known if I was just, you know, the smoke again.
Yeah.
Somebody over here, Karen.
So what I was looking at today was, it's often that I'll be in the facilitation role, and someone will be talking about content, but I'll recognize the process. So that, even though the content is really alien to me, the process is very familiar, so that's the place that is the connecting point.
Uh-huh. Which is a point of authority for you.
A point of authority.
In that way that we're talking about. So you may have no idea what their content is. But you know that the process is okay. So that gives you that confidence,
yes.
that you can address this.
Because I'm familiar with the process for myself.
Yep. Which is level. All that matters,
yeah.
as we know.
Yeah. And then this other thing I wanted to share, and I don't know if I'm going to remember it. So with my reflective listening buddy, we've been looking at addictions and, you know, the big addiction to self-hate, but we've been breaking it down to content, and you know, she'll reveal and talk and have her experience of it, and then I'll reflect back, and I'll hear the responses, yes, you know, well, by the end of the call, we realized we're both accepting. Our reflection accepts in each other what we aren't able to accept in ourselves.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's beautifully stated.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah. That's what Sangha is.
Yes.
Really. Yeah.
And I was so afraid to, well, this is my thing, you know, fear to talk out loud. And it came out just perfectly.
Isn't that?
That's what I was pointing to in the circle today.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that you can trust that.
Yeah.
And the more you trust it, the more it shows up. And the more it shows up, the more you trust it. And mm-hmm. the transformation happens in spite of us. Yeah. Thank you. I want to ask people this evening, what would be most helpful for you? Does anybody have a sense of that when you've looked at what we've done and your day so far, and you have a feel for what would be helpful, how you would like to spend this time?
I don't know if it's tonight, but what's just come up for me all afternoon, and I've been jotting down, are just those, the tough ones. So I've been listening to the ones they've just now surfacing all of a sudden where at the beginning they weren't.
Uh-huh. The tough facilitations.
Right.
Now, is this when you were facilitating and somebody said something and
yes,
that kind
it,
of thing?
But it brought up, yes, and but to me it's sort of generic, you know, because I can see where that probably happened at other times. I just mm-hmm. don't remember that happened to be the one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so are people, would people be open to a game about that? So I suppose what we would need then would be a facilitator and a difficult person. Both roles we can all play, right? Shall we ask for the kind of the the facilitation that sort of threw you or stumped you or that sort of thing, and you could play that with somebody else facilitating you? Mm-hmm. Would that be fun?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so who has one of those that you'd like to start us off with? Danny, okay, will you play that role then? You'll play the person who was there in front of you that threw you.
Okay.
All right, now, we need a facilitator. All right, do you want one of the old timers to say, oh, all right, add a woman. All right, here they go.
Because I know that I'll be supported.
That's exactly right. We are here for you, sister.
Well, this may not be right, but it feels like it might not work unless I give just a little bit of background, like just diving into it.
Well, can you give the background as the character? Kind of, you know, adopt the, and then tell a little of your story.
It's a pattern. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Do we need to know that this is like week 24 that you come in with this?
No, it's just, I shouldn't say what it is.
You don't want to give anything away.
No.
Because I bet nobody gave anything away when you were hit with it.
Well, it was just, it happens over and over and over.
Okay, so we're at scene 48.
Yeah. Well, here's, okay. You know, I just don't know about this practice. I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and, you know, I talked about it with my therapist, and, you know, she agrees with me that, like, this talking in terms of subpersonalities is splitting, and it distances me from myself, and so I just want to keep talking in terms of I, and, like, I don't want to talk about this, like, this part of me.
So, if I understand you, that, you're just questioning this practice, and the part of the practice where we talk about subpersonalities, and when you talk with your therapist about this, she seems to agree that it may not be helpful if you don't want to talk in terms of I.
Yeah, because, yeah, you know, all my life I've been the kind of person who I was just always, like, cutting myself off from myself, and this, all this talk about subpersonalities and a part of me, it's just not who I am.
So all this talk about subpersonalities and a part of me is just not who you are.
No, right.
So there's a lot of questioning going on here.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my therapist. Well done. So, Danny, what about that? Is it that she wears you down?
It's how many times do we have to have this conversation? It's... I run out of ideas about how to deal with it. Like once I made a...
Like, why don't you quit?
No. No. I thought, oh, maybe this is crossing the line. But I asked if she could talk for the next few minutes without saying the word I.
Without saying the word
I. How'd she do? Not so good. Okay, so I'm wondering, Claire, if you could ask some kind of clarifying or drawing out questions in this, just to see where it goes.
I'm not really, don't really know. Well, I can guess what clarifying and drawing out means, but I've never had that conversation
before. Okay, so shall we have somebody else come in to try that piece of it? Thank you, that was lovely. You rendered him speechless. Okay, so who would do a little reflecting as well as some drawing out and maybe some clarifying?
I want to learn, so.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Let's see. Oh, I can't do this.
Okay, very good. Okay, hit it one more time. Bad meditator.
So I've been feeling like you know, when I was at home a little while ago, and I was trying to think about whether or not to come here tonight, and I thought you know, there's all these good reasons for coming, and then I thought there's all these, you know, reasons that I shouldn't come, and I was just thinking, okay, I'll just go. And so here I am.
So it sounds like you were struggling at home about whether you should come tonight or not.
Yeah, I struggle a lot.
And it sounds like that's a process that you experience often.
Process?
In that you struggle. What I mean by that is it sounds like you struggle with things a lot from what you just said. Did I understand that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And it sounds like that is pretty uncomfortable for some part of you.
Well, I don't know about some part of me. It's just I have a hard time with it.
Right. Well, you know, in this practice, we talk about parts because we know if we're suffering, if we're struggling at suffering, the way we refer to that is that probably is coming from a place of conditioning.
Yeah, I know we talk about, I know in this practice there's all this talk about subpersonalities, and I've been doing this practice a long time, but this is just something that I don't know, this is what makes me wonder and think maybe this practice isn't for me, because I don't know about these subpersonalities. They just feel so distancing and so like splitting and cutting me off from myself.
So it sounds like that struggle continues as you look at subpersonalities, the whole idea of subpersonalities. And that's from what you've said in the past, that's been going on for some time.
Yeah.
But there's something that keeps you coming back.
I've always been afraid to go there. Yeah, there's something that keeps me coming back.
Well, just my encouragement would be to just keep an eye on that. What is it? What is it that makes you, that brings you back?
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. That was exactly the one I was hoping that you were going to get to. Were other people?
Yeah.
It's like, okay then, why are you doing this? You know, what is it? Yes, you struggle. Yes, you don't like this. Yes, but you keep showing up. So what is that that's bringing you? Yeah, it's a perfect use of one of those clarifying or drawing out questions.
It seems like a perfect example of
how there are parts of her too, because, oh, I mean, I say her, but I don't know, could be. But yeah, somebody keeps coming and somebody keeps objecting to
yes.
it. So I mean, how more two people, how more two parts can there be? Yeah. Jen?
I just saw too, that would be such a right place to send someone back to the mothership, like you were talking about yesterday.
Uh-huh.
That sense of, you know, gosh, you know, you're not sure, whatever. It would be so interesting to, you know, check out the monastery schedule and see, you know, have a chance to really explore that. Just get along that line of,
yeah.
So you keep some part, you know, some, wouldn't say some part, but. It's funny, now I don't even know how not to say that.
Right.
You want to do practice in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. So it might be helpful to go on a retreat and just spend some quiet time exploring that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that's great. Somebody else got a rough interaction that you want to... Deb?
I've got one.
Okay, all right. So, and you can act this person out?
Sure.
All right, so we need a facilitator. All right, Rebecca.
Okay. And I'm just going
to
say that...
And you know, you don't actually have to get close to each other. I mean, it's not... Is it easier?
I think I can...
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, that's probably easier.
And I'm just going to say the context. There were two examples that came to my mind, but I could just choose one of them. Part of me wants to say what was going on as a facilitator in this, too.
Danny had to go.
All right.
Just cold.
Cold. Okay. So this is at an orientation.
Oh, at an orientation. Oh,
yeah,
how very
with a group
exciting.
Of people.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
Okay.
All right.
And this is at the end of the orientation. Lots of excited people.
Except for one.
I'm listening, but I mean, I'm just not sure why I really came tonight, because, you know, meditation is supposed to be about relaxing. I mean, I know all about meditation, but I mean, I come here and everyone's silent. You sit facing the wall. No one looks at each other. It just seems really, really serious and uptight to me.
So you're wondering why you even came here, because you know a lot about meditation and we sit facing the wall.
Meditation's about relaxing.
Yeah, and meditation's about relaxing.
Yeah. I mean, everyone here is so serious. And guys don't even look at each other.
Yeah. So we don't look at each other and everything is so serious. What were you looking for when you came here?
I mean, I'm open. I have an open mind. I just want to check.
So you're open, you have an open mind. So when you came here, what were you looking for?
I mean, I was really hoping to find a group of people I could just meditate with, just relax with. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you're looking for a group to meditate with, to relax with, and yet some part of you found this uptight and serious.
Well, I mean, compared to other meditation scenes I've been part of, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are other groups that have different ways of meditating, and this the way that we meditate in this group is facing the wall, and that seems serious.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Oh, I'll tell you though, Deb, you've got that LA.
I know.
From that first. And this girl is screen test. And so where did it go? Did she?
Well, now I get to say what's going on for me as a facilitator. It was one of those group of people who all had shared really just, I predict, a lot of sincerity and also inspiration about being there in the group. And so in that place, I just go to, you know, I want this interaction to be something that's helpful for the whole, you know, as well as for this person, but we'll just see. Kind of not knowing how much willingness this person has. So what ended up happening is I ended up facilitating this person a bit, just in the way of projection, because someone else had brought up projection, so it kind of brought the group back to the conversation. And she actually opened it a little bit, but I still left feeling like that was a rugged last share.
Oh,
and I went home and I emailed Dave about it. But the next group we had, people who had all been there, actually a number of people who are regulars brought up that interaction and talked about that and how much that strengthened their commitment to wanting to, something about protect practice.
Uh-huh.
It was really interesting.
Yeah.
So in the end, it was all...
Yeah, that is one of those places where everybody in the room is watching you to see what you're going to do.
Yeah.
If you get uptight, if you get snarky, if you in any way indicate that there's something wrong with her,
totally,
or she's not welcome, mm-hmm, they're all out of there.
Yeah.
But if you just remain, as Rebecca did, you know, that centered place, just reflecting and asking her and welcoming her, and I mean, she really is just getting farther and farther out there.
Yeah.
And most people, of course, I project, would be very happy if she never showed up again.
Yeah, she didn't.
Which she didn't. And I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there only twice in orientations have there been someone like that. That kind of, usually I just project a lot of willingness. And that one was when the group was fairly new, and it was really helpful to me because it just was a reminder, as we always talk about, it's not at all about me making a particular, impacting that person in a particular way,
right,
at all.
Right.
It's about me staying present and an acceptance of what is.
Yeah.
I have no control over what actually happens to someone.
Exactly.
Or not.
And you never, thank you, Rebecca. You actually never know. a number of years ago, a fellow said to me, who was one of those types, he said, you know, I stayed with practice because you would never give an inch. And it was, I mean, that's, he wanted to find somebody who wasn't going to let him run his number.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I had, you know, gone that route of, well, you know, we could look at each other once if that would make you feel better, then it would not have satisfied her, because that's not what she had going on. And it would have destroyed the integrity of the group. Mm-hmm. So, that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's such an interesting one. It's so difficult sometimes to get past that desire to please everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want everybody to have the experience that we have, and a lot of people aren't there to have that experience. The other thing that I really like about that is just my current obsession, I think, because it's going to be the next book, which is how our story prevents us from seeing what is so.
Mm-hmm.
So her story is, I'm really open-minded.
Yeah.
And so she can be just completely closed-minded. And it's fine because she's really open-minded. And it's just that you people are so closed. You know, that it's not her fault, really. I mean, she's open-minded enough to accept you closed-minded people. And just how often we can get ourselves in that loop of so believing the story that anything can be going on and makes no impact at all. Yeah. All right, thank you. Anybody else got one? Anybody just want to facilitate, and I'll give you some opportunities.
Sure, I have, but you know, I get, maybe that's why I struggle with it. I can't even get a hold of it to redo it because it was so all over the map. I couldn't even follow it to facilitate it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's how it felt to me as I was facilitating.
Well, this is an important point. Now, who knows? But have you encountered as facilitators what in psychology is called a borderline personality?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you. They will give you a facilitation run for your money.
Mm-hmm.
It's the person that no matter, I mean, you can reflect, and that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you reflect that, and actually that's not it. And you reflect that, and that's not it. And after, you know, 8 or 10 of those interactions, you think, one of us is crazy, and I'm starting to think it's me. But there's just that, you cannot get the person to stand still long enough to get any kind of interaction with them going.
So what do you do in this?
Well, what I do is extricate myself as quickly as possible. And I find that nodding and smiling and making a show is an excellent way to do it. Yeah. And usually, a la Deb's person, those kind of people don't stay around a situation like this one for very long. Mm-hmm. Because they can't really run their number. What they specialize in is being able to tell some long, convoluted, rambling story. And if you keep facilitating them, it doesn't give them what they're looking for. They can stay a lot longer than you wish.
Well, this person has been around for quite a long time, and I've seen wherever Phil is. Phil has facilitated this person, and I just sort of marvel because as she's feeling, she goes, well, you know, I'm really having a hard time with this, but, you know, following you.
Uh-huh.
But, and then she would reflect a little bit whatever she saw.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like I couldn't even, I don't remember.
Yeah, that's my strongest encouragement.
Okay.
When you find yourself going down one of those slippery slopes, just get out of it as quickly as you can, because it's not going to be helpful. It's not going to be helpful to anybody. What you want to do, again, is do it in a way that doesn't alienate anybody in the group. Mm-hmm. Because so many people are afraid anyway. Mm-hmm. And if the facilitator is perceived as being scary, then you'll lose people who really could benefit from the practice. Jen and then Phil.
It just occurred to me that a really fun kind of facilitation exercise for all of us is listening to the radio show, but also those conference calls we've just started doing, to listen to those, because there was a really, on the very first call, there was a high-level example of what you're talking about, and the way Dave...
Ramen man. Ramen man.
And oh my goodness, on the telephone it's that high level. Because it is just so, you know, and you're on your own. It's not like the other facilitators. You know, if we were in the room, one of us would have come in immediately, and Dave would have called on us.
Because
there's no point, which goes back to a discussion we were over at Mueller, there's no point in trying to take it on yourself as the facilitator in the front of the room. You just, there's no need for it. It's actually much easier to let someone from the side, you know, extricate the situation, but then you are on the telephone. You know, what am I going to do? Unmute myself and think? I just saw something about that.
But that would be hysterical.
I was over there, my heart was pounding, and I was like, okay, I'm getting ready, but, you know.
Dave, go.
And, you know, I mean, I knew that. I've been in a situation, you know, anyway. So, but just, it's such a clear example of what Dave was doing was pull the attention back here. Pull the attention, you know, back into the conversation. And in a way, exactly as you're talking about, in a way that, you know, doesn't just say, okay, I'm going to hang up on you now.
As if he could with 80 other people on her call, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You're going to need to mute yourself now. Those are going to be such good training things for all of us to listen to.
Uh-huh.
How people deal with different situations.
Yeah, yeah, and do. And you know, the thing about that kind of situation, it gets even trickier the more anonymous it gets.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm actually shocked that we don't have more of that on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really am. Because email classes and that sort of thing, you know, people can really get out there if they think nobody knows who they are.
Yeah.
And so that kind of situation is really ripe for that.
Yeah.
Phil?
Yeah, this person that Jan was talking about is the one I was
actually referring to a little bit earlier. And what I do is, for better or for worse, you know, is to facilitate for a little bit. I mean, the fellow is the person is pretty sincere. And for just a short time until, you know, see if I can follow for a bit. And then I try to, what I do is say something like, now that might be a good place to look. Why don't you, you know, for homework or something like that. And that, the person feels pretty good, and it seems to not be a problem for the group. Once in a while, if there's something very pertinent, they'll say, well, let's open it up to everybody else. But
which is not necessarily a negative.
No.
Because, it can be that this is a really good topic. Yes. This is a really, let's bring everybody into this discussion.
Exactly. And that's how I usually use it, you know, like, because it makes like what we have on Sunday, you know, kind of a, everybody brings what they're looking at through the lens of, say, if it's acceptance or something like that. So usually it's, you know, used that way. So then that makes it, if you have to use it for, to end somebody, it makes it a very
kind
ending, because they know, oh, we're going to open it up to the group.
Penny?
As I'm listening to this, I'm thinking about difficult situations I observe, say, in group. It feels like that what makes them difficult is, you know, if we're reflective, so we can hear what we're saying. And if I'm hearing correctly what the example has been given, the difficult person is the person who has no interest in hearing what they're saying.
Yes.
And so the reflection is just kind of an irritation or just a kind of a sign that you're paying attention. But the process that we're trying to do through reflective listening sounds like a process that the kind of people we're talking about are not interested in participating in.
I think probably you're right. And again, the benefit is for the other people in the room. Because the other people in the room are very likely not missing a beat on any of this. You know, they're completely tuned in to what's happening here. And so they can benefit from observing it while the person that's is actually engaged in it may be totally oblivious.
Well, what was coming up for me is that that sort of just sort of endlessly going with that person is not necessary.
You know? No,
I mean, it just makes it clear that there's a point at which you do call it off because they're not playing the game.
That's right. That's right. But what you don't have to do with somebody like that is anything other than reflecting.
Right.
Because otherwise, you're in deep doo doo. You start asking leading questions and. It's all over.
Off to the races.
Off to the races. So, yeah, to use whatever technique you can use to get it stopped at whatever point it feels important to get it stopped is probably the best that you can do. Dave?
Just kind of along those lines, I would say, too, that it seems like in a situation like that, the responsibility of the facilitator is to the group energy rather than to the person you're talking to.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and you really, I mean, they have their amount of time. Like everybody else has their amount of time. And in a way, you could say they could spend it in the way they want to some degree. And it seems like the facilitator needs essentially to treat them like anyone else with the same amount of respect and everything and with the same sort of expectation that they're going to own their process and all of that. And they do with that with what they're going to do. And then the facilitator is just watching that, you know, we're not getting sucked into that.
Yes.
We're not going on twice as long as everybody else and dragging everybody else in. We're not getting to a head-butting thing over it. You know, we're not changing the rules at all for this person. Because it seems like what that produces is what you were saying a minute ago, where everybody, the person who's speaking might not be getting anything out of it, but everybody else in the room is like, wow, here's a perfect snapshot of how we call ourselves a sufferer. And this is really, and in relationship with someone who's not budging.
Right, who is not suffering over it.
Exactly.
Who's not seeing that there's something wrong, who's not made miserable, who's not squirming, who's just perfectly fine with the situation, who is master of the situation.
Yeah, especially on the side of like making them wrong for it or
Right.
Something like that. Because, boy, that's a powerful thing to see. You know, because conditioning is just is weak in comparison to someone who's centered. Mm-hmm. And just to witness that in two outside people is a pretty powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. And again, if it's somebody who's in your group regularly, and they are talkers, you want them to talk as early in the group as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is exactly the kind of person who will wait to the end and suck the energy out of the group.
Yeah.
And that, in terms of watching group energy, you cannot allow that to happen.
Yeah, big time. And the other one, as you mentioned earlier, is the first person who shares first all the time, and then immediately just sort of drags everybody into, you know, something to get stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and you don't have to, you know, just because somebody raises their hand doesn't mean that's all wrong.
Precisely.
Especially if there's a lot of choices.
Yeah. And that's another thing. If it's a Sangha situation, then people can be sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the room knows, if you've been sitting together for any length of time, everybody knows who everybody else in the room is. Do we just sit back and let the facilitator, be out there on their own, or do we take some responsibility for knowing that we're getting to the end of group? We know that what's her name is going to go and suck the energy. So, you know, you do something to change that and run out the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca.
I want to report that I have definitely found my fearful facilitator now. I've gotten in touch with that after the call.
Excellent.
But the difficult situation that I can't role play it because I just don't have the language. But it's the person that gets all intellectual and throws around all kinds of different names and readings and are you saying this and are you saying, you know, are you...
Well, but now didn't Dogen actually say that moon drops are in bubbles?
And if it's your thing and that, you know, all that kind of stuff.
That is one, folks, where you never want to lose your sense of humor. You know, that can, you can only respond to that with, probably. I look really excited about it. Because, you know, again, you've got to pick your battles. You know, do you really want this person in the group with you week after week after week? Or would you rather they just moved on down the street to that group of samurais, you know, who want to do this. You know, so if you're willing actually to go for mastery, then don't ever engage. You know, so there's the old Zen story about the Zen teacher who's, you know, doing a deal. And the guy comes in who's from the hoo-hoo school of and do you know this one?
Uh-uh.
And, you know, he's your guy. You know, he's got a stick and he's, you know, and he sort of, whoa, from the back of the room. And the master says, well, that's a really interesting point. Why don't you come up here? The guy comes, he said, right there, it's there, right there. The guy says, whoa, 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 whoa. He says, now that is interesting. Would you mind moving over here? this story always chokes me out. Thank you, Alex. So the story goes on. You know, he does that to him several times. And then finally he says, and the guy, you know, never gets it. He's just, every time, you know, and he's pontificating from every position. And the master says, finally, you know, you just seem like a really nice, incredibly knowledgeable fellow. Would you mind having a seat? And it was so obvious to everyone who was in absolute control of the situation the entire time, that Yeah. Now, of course, this was a Zen master who actually didn't mind humiliating the chap. But my impression of the story is he actually probably never got it. Mm-hmm. He from his point of view, he won that skirmish. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to go that route, you know, one of my favorite lines is when somebody starts in on that, you know, in any room I'm in, any room, probably almost everybody in the room knows more about Buddhism than I do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you!
Sure. It just looks like there's somebody in it.
It's a better water over there.
No, this looks good. Eggnog. Protein. Oh, thank you. But you have to be willing for that person's opinion of you to be that you are a know-nothing and really ought to be doing something else with your time. And do you really care? Because what you're doing is your practice. And you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Phil?
One of the things you told us in the very beginning, you know, to do when you set us out to facilitate not knowing anything, is...
Well,
and it's still.
I beg to differ. I truly do beg to differ.
Yes.
Yes.
You know what I meant? Having for the first time sitting on the cushion and all that.
Yes. That, although I did not actually technically send you out without ever having sat on the cushion.
No, we had, and I was going to say it. We had that hot seat thing for a while.
Yes, you most assuredly did.
And I was wondering if we could do some kind of form of that. You know, not exactly the same because we didn't reflect at that point, but...
That would be very fun. People...
Yeah.
And that could be one that anybody who wanted to play could play.
Right.
So what she's referring to is that a person would just sit up here and then somebody would ask them a question. And preferably the most off-the-wall... wacko bizarre question that you can come up with. Not absurd, but just the kind of thing that, you know, is not designed to make them comfortable. So it's essentially what in Zen is called Dharma combat.
Yeah, and then the idea was to look inside and just say whatever's there, regardless of whether, you know, and not worry about what you said or how you felt or, you know, just to say it. Mm-hmm. And then the next person would ask a question and you'd do the same.
Yeah, sometimes we would be at Carmel and somebody, one evening, different people would take the hot seat and everybody in the room would ask them whatever question they had.
It was quite intense and quite good training.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what I wanted to say is the thing that never...
So you're not going to convince these people that you were sent out without any training,
no,
since that's the kind
of
thing that we used to do to people.
It's just that whole thing of being new and being afraid and not knowing what to say because the reflection, what this was a wonderful skill that we have now. But the thing that you said and what I used many, many times, and it still works today, of course, is in this practice we go back to the breath, and it's amazing how, you know, you can say it in any situation, and because it's always true, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
And then you get the
right.
What does that even mean? Go back to the breath. I remember Cameron going back to the breath. Remember that realization? Oh, for years I was going back to the breath. I'm going to go back to the breath. But that, yes.
Yeah, because
that can
that,
be
and
a,
that's the essential point of our whole practice, is to just be with the breath. You just use some variation on that.
Yeah, and if all else fails, you can always go back to the breath.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. Dave?
Just thinking of a
that situation's been challenging for me, where the person you're talking to kind of comes at the facilitator. I was thinking, just popped in my head, I haven't thought about it in years, but we had a TINW retreat, and there's a woman here who was a big challenge from the beginning. I was a relatively new, there's nothing wrong with you, facilitator, and she's from Australia, and boy, she was difficult. And so I was, you know, I was just, you know, having to be on her, basically. And then
So do you mean she would just go off and you'd have to steer her back, or she was...
She was like this the whole time. She was like...
Why are you saying that?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Exactly. Yeah, and kind of...
I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I can't remember all that well, but I think it was something like that. It was just big resistance. I just... The thing I remember is one time we got in the middle of one of these, you know, kind of interactions, and she said, I doubt your gentleness, David.
I doubt what?
I doubt your gentleness.
Oh.
And my mother used to call me David. Yeah, it was one of those. I just can't remember. And,
you always like my brother better.
I don't know if I'm making it up now, or just, but it was actually memory, but just like the two things happening simultaneously, like melting into this little child, mm-hmm. and attempting to pull back the person who could stay there, facilitate, mm-hmm. at the same time. And I mean, I think it's particular to there's nothing wrong with your work, because it does happen occasionally where you get in those kinds of situations. Yes, those kind of things don't really happen like on a Sunday group. It's more...
Right.
You know, this is
no, it's in a retreat when people are getting threatened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
although, I mean, we get challenging people just driving down the drive, but that's more in those kind of out there types. That's not somebody who is sensing that they're cornered. And
yeah, exactly. Well, you spent 2 or 3 days working into a really vulnerable place, mm-hmm. and then there you are, and then... It's, you know, it really is like I heard you say, I can't remember how you said it, but a number of times, you know, like you're their best opportunity to, you know, this is their big chance, mm-hmm. kind of, because they've gotten, you know, partly through their own willingness and partly through the structure of the retreat, have gotten wiggled back into this place they've been avoiding their whole lives, and then, you know, there's the choices in front of them suddenly that they've been avoiding, that they have been avoiding their whole life. Are you going to let go of this and be free, or are you going to hang on to this and just go through that until mm-hmm. the end? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the condition to come up and respond to that sometimes can be really scary mm-hmm. for the facilitator.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is, we don't always pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We don't. And we all have those moments of, I wish that had gone differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the... 3 hours later, knowing exactly what the masterful stroke was. Yeah. And that's just how it is.
Yeah. I have another memory, as you said, that being in a, it wasn't really difficult interaction, but it was, you know, there was some resistance there, and I was making some kind of point about an assumption being made, and she basically said, no, I think you're the one who's making the assumption here. And she was right. And, just one of those places where I can't remember what I did, but you know, after I was like, she was right.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was she was seeing that situation more clearly than I was,
mm-hmm.
and so it's helpful, but
yeah,
it's
painful.
Painful.
yeah. That's how we learn. Mm-hmm. Thank God we're all practicing on each other all the time.
This feels somewhat related. I just was noticing a process in myself in terms of self-facilitation that I can see influencing facilitation. I've been noticing, I've caught myself, I've caught conditioning using the guidance to not engage in the conversation as a way of blowing past the one who's actually in there is hurting.
Uh-huh.
So, I noticed it the other night. I was going back to my criminal teacher, and I just had this moment of catching it. That was a familiar conversation. It's, you know, I'm tired of it. And so, you know, what I was hearing was, well, just drop the conversation. And what I caught was that there's almost a kind of, it's almost like a sub-vocal conversation that's still going on. And someone is being abused in there.
Uh-huh.
And I can just jump to, well, we're not going to get into this. You know, we're not going to entertain this. And I needed to, first of all, stop and pay attention to that while I'm here in this room. And also, kind of rediscover that paying attention to the one who's hurting is not the same thing as being involved in the conversation.
Right. In fact, what it sounds like is that what you saw is that that conversation keeps you from being sensitive to the one who needs to be attended to.
Yeah. So I was saying this for a couple of reasons. One is you were talking about, you know, we can only be okay with things that we have really examined ourselves. And so I see that as a, I just see that this is something the conditioning has found that it can use with me, is that drop the conversation can mean for me, don't pay attention, don't go there, don't experience that feeling, that set of experiences. And I imagine that same, it's a form of avoidance, and that same thing could happen externally. That same thing could be a way of staying with someone out, you know, that I'm reflecting because I don't want to go there.
Yeah, well, and that goes back to something else that we were talking about, of looking to see who's interpreting guidance. Because conditioning is always going to want to interpret guidance in a way that serves it.
Right.
Yeah.
I was thinking about how you say, you know, oh, we can look at that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now, don't look at that. Yeah. That's just a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very good. And with each one of these, again, if we develop an excitement about seeing how all of this, you know, I mean, this is a human being, for God's sake. You know, we could just, it's a laboratory. We can just get in there and take this stuff apart and figure it out and be so helpful. Or we can listen to conditioning and not want to look and be afraid and feel bad and feel guilty and be ashamed of it and waste a lifetime. We must away. You know, Melinda, you've been talking about doing a facilitation manual.
Yes.
I would think if that's all being kept for posterity, we're creating a facilitation manual this week, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.